Og þá bjóðum við velkominn fyrsta fyrirlesara morgunsins, Karl M. frá Kóvína.
Good morning, my name is Carl, I'm an alcoholic. Let me get some water here real fast. Once again, it's a great honor to be here, and I am so amazed again that just as many people are here at the morning workshops as were at the speaker meetings. You guys have now legitimately beat out 99% of the conferences in the United States by your attendance at the workshops. It's really true. Usually the speaker meetings are full and the workshops are about one quarter full. So I'm very impressed with you Icelanders. I knew it came from somewhere, right? Because I'm always so impressed with myself, that's what it is. But before I get going, I want to, again, I would not normally do this because I treasure this. I have a first edition big book with me that I brought from the United States, and I don't know if it, maybe some of you have seen them before, maybe a number of you have them, I don't know. I didn't know how rare it would be here, but I have one here, and Mickey is holding it up, and I would like to hand that around, and you can glance at that as we're going through the workshop, but please be very, very careful with it, and also when it's in this corner, Michael and Mickey have been signing so many books, please do not sign this one. I love you both, but I don't need your phone number in my first edition. But you'll notice that it has a reprinted cover the way that the old covers of the big books of Alcoholics Anonymous were. So it's sort of a reprinted cover around that. It is a 12th printing from 1948. So, and you'll also notice we're going to be going over the doctor's opinion in here. You'll notice, glance through the doctor's opinion there, and you'll see that they, where Dr. Silkworth signs In all our other big books, where he puts his name very freely in there, next to the letters that he had given, he does not there. In fact, they go blank, blank, M.D. You'll notice that when they hand that around. So when Mickey's through with it, he'll hand that around. Anyway, I am. We're here to talk about the doctor's opinion. You may be thinking, boy, when are we going to get on to some of these other speakers that came all this way? But it just sort of the luck of the draw. I got Friday night and I got doctor's opinion, so I'm actually glad about that. I get to get it out of the way and then sit out there with you the rest of the whole weekend. Now, doctor's opinion. I would like to chat a little bit about a little bit of history about who he was a little bit. How many people here have never ever thoroughly read the doctor's opinion? And be honest, it's okay. It's not any secret around here that some of us haven't. Okay. How many people feel they have really been able to study it and understand it? How many people are not sure or are scared to raise their hand? There we go. There we go. Okay. All right. The first thing we need to know about the doctor's opinion is that he is not an alcoholic. Okay. He is, Dr. William Silkworth was the head of a hospital named Towns Hospital in New York. When you read Bill's story, you will find where he keeps on going into a detox or the hospital, Towns Hospital in New York, and Dr. William B. Silkworth is the head physician at this hospital. Now, we often, the Society of AA has often regarded Dr. Silkworth as a saint because of the hard work he had done with alcoholics. Now, we don't regard Bill and Bob as saints, do we? No, we don't. But yet, it's often referred to that Dr. Silkworth, we almost regard him as a saint. And the reason that we would regard him as a saint for the work he did for us, for Alcoholics Anonymous, and not Bill and Bob, is simply because Bill and Bob were alcoholics trying to save their own butt, right? Dr. Silkworth did not have his life at stake. He just somehow developed a love for working with alcoholics. Now, I found out that he did not always have this great love for working with alcoholics. He came across it almost by mistake. He actually had been a very successful doctor and had invested a lot of money in the stock market and had also crashed. All of his financial resources had crashed in the market along with Bill. This is some of this great love for working with alcoholics. He came across it in the stock market. I've always wanted to identify with Bill, but not in that way. Anybody else invest in tech stocks around here? Anyway, and so he really was having trouble finding, Silkworth was actually having trouble finding a job because of the Big Depression. And Charles Townes offered him this job as head of the alcoholic ward at his New York hospital. Now, if you were a prominent physician, apparently had made a lot of money and running in great circle, great social circles, and now you are offered a job at an alcoholic ward in Towns Hospital, and you are going to be serving the bums off the street, it's really not something you're going to be boasting to all your friends about. Look at this. I now get to run the beds at the alcoholic ward in Towns Hospital. So he was not happy about it. It was not like a big move up in his career. It really wasn't. But he took it at a very low stipend, a very low salary, because he couldn't get anything else. And it was there that then he developed this love for alcoholics and really became just absolutely attached to us. And this is the hospital that Bill came in and out of. And when Bill works his first step, when you can see in Bill's story when he is working the first step and completely surrendering, he came across Dr. Silkworth, and Dr. Silkworth is the one that gave him the definition of what the problem is with the alcoholic. Now, Silkworth loved us alcoholics, and he knew what was wrong with us, but he didn't know how to help us. And that was extremely frustrating for him, because doctors, yes, that's part of it. They love to diagnose a disease or diagnose a problem, but they also like to be able to follow that up with, and if you take these, you'll get better. Or if we do this surgery, you will get better. If you follow this prescription, you will get better. But he was at a loss. He did not know what the solution was for us, but he knew the problem. Now, if you've been in Alcoholics Anonymous for a while, you know there's three things that we need to have in our lives to stay sober. We need to know what the problem is, what the solution is, and what the plan of action to bring about that solution. We need those things in our lives. It's no different than if your car breaks down, you need to know those three things, don't you? You need to know what's wrong with the car, what the solution to that would be, and what the plan of action. Let's say you break down on the road. Now, you're not just going to go randomly changing out the battery, pulling wires, and pour in more gas, add some more oil, wash the windows, and see which one works, are you? Change a couple of tires, right? You're going to try to figure out what's wrong, right? That's the first thing you need to know. You need to figure out what's wrong. Is it indeed a dead battery? If you have found out indeed it is a dead battery, what's your solution? A new battery, right? And what's the plan of action to get that new battery? Go down to the store and buy one, right? So you need the problem, the solution, and the plan of action. And Silkworth was there in New York, and through his work, his medical expertise, and his observations of the hundreds of alcoholics coming and going out of that ward, out of the alcoholic ward, and he actually, because he loved us, talked with us, right? Many other doctors at that time would never even speak to them. They just say, okay, pump them full of this and let them rest and have them do this. But he was actually talking in depth with us and having conversations and forming his theories as he was working with us. But he knew the problem, but he did not know the solution or any plan of action to bring about that solution. So when Bill got sober, Silkworth was really quite interested. And that's when, after Bill got sober, Bill and the first 100 came back to Dr. Silkworth and said, you were a vital part of my being this solution that I have found, because I needed to know what was wrong with me. And I imagine, I of course wasn't there, but after Bill got sober, he wanted to find out, what was it that converged in on me that I was able to stay sober and find this solution, and that now we have this many people sober? So he was tracking back over his life, and he saw a very important component were his conversations and his interactions and the views of Dr. Silkworth. And so that's why I'm sure that they then asked Dr. Silkworth to add to the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Okay, now the beautiful part about Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's sort of like almost like a You know, at Christmas time, all Christians get together and they tell the wonderful story of the birth of Jesus and the manger, and there's no room at the inn, and the donkey and Joseph and the three wise men and the star, right? We all know that story. We're all told that as children. I imagine that, yes? Everybody knows that. And, you know, that's sort of Christianity's way of celebrating the birth of Christianity. Well, in looking at the birth of Alcoholics Anonymous, because to me, equally important, equally amazing, an incredible gift to mankind, that I look at the birth of Alcoholics Anonymous almost the same way. Now, there certainly were not three wise men involved, I can guarantee you that. In fact, just the opposite, right? But when you look at the way that the solution converged in on Bill and the sequence of events that happened, it's just as amazing to me that Bill, while drinking in New York, comes in and is interacting with Dr. Silkworth and he finds out the problem, but he doesn't know the solution. Over in Europe, now I'm going to be jumping out, ahead a bit, over in Europe, Carl Jung, the celebrated psychologist, he knew our solution. He knew that alcoholics of our type, because he was also interacting with alcoholics, he knew what the solution for alcoholics were. He knew that we needed to have a vital spiritual awakening. So over at the very same time in history, in New York, Dr. Silkworth knows our problem, but doesn't know what our solution is. Over in Europe, Carl Jung, he knows what our solution is, but has no clue what our problem is. He did not know what was actually wrong with us. He did not know what Silkworth knew, but he knew that we needed a vital spiritual awakening, right? And at the very, also at the very same time in history, there was this other group of people, actually a Christian-based group called the Oxford Groups, or the Oxford Movement, going on in the United States, that had a plan of action going on. But they didn't know what was wrong with anybody, or they didn't know what the solution is, but they had a plan of action going on, right? And those three things, through a series of events, converged in on Bill W. The problem, the solution, and the plan of action. Now, I'm not going to take all the time to describe exactly that sequence of events. If it sparked any interest in you at all and you don't know the sequence of events, I strongly encourage you to either start asking old-timers or other people that do know, or start reading yourself all the AA literature, because you can gather all of that information. It's actually, if you really study the book, you're going to find out all of that. It's all really all in here, but they only make light reference to some of those events as it converged in on Bill. But you have to study the book. So anyway, the first thing apparently is they asked Dr. Silkworth just to write a letter of endorsement, right? You know what a letter of endorsement is if you're gonna put in a job resume and maybe you're about ready to be hired and they say, do you have anybody to vouch for you, right? So then you go to a past employer or you go to if you have a family friend in town who's sort of a prominent business person or well-known who actually thinks well of you. Well, actually, that's right. Most of us wouldn't have that, would we? Yeah, somebody prominent who used to think well of us when we were drinking. Yeah, wouldn't be happening. All right, but that sort of thing, that Alcoholics Anonymous was sort of asking for a letter of endorsement from Dr. Silkworth. And we can see right there, it's in the Roman numerals, XXIII, right there at the... Most people have their big book, yeah? Okay. All right. It's right there at the beginning. And if you read that first part, it really does not give us a lot of in-depth talk about what alcoholism is or his theories that we're going to talk about in a few minutes. It's really just sort of a quick little synopsis of that one of these fellows came to my hospital. He was obviously desperate. Something happened to him. I think that's just great. And you can... But he does say something very, very impressive. If we notice at the bottom, when he describes Bill and means of recovery that he witnessed, he says, these facts appear to be of extreme medical importance because of the extraordinary possibilities of rapid growth inherent in this group, meaning this group of people that are staying sober. They may mark a new epoch in the annals of alcoholism. So he's making reference to that there's been years, if not centuries, of medical research on alcoholism, and it hadn't really gone anywhere. They were still rather stumped as to what to do. And so he makes a really big statement. Now, I really think that if you notice in that first edition that he did not put his name in there. I imagine he did not want to put his name in there because of how controversial this type of statement medically was going to be. Right? These days, we sort of take it for granted that alcoholism is a disease. Right? Most every insurance company will agree with that. What we call our American Medical Association agrees with that alcoholism is a disease. World Health Organization agrees that alcoholism is a disease. Pretty much it's a generally accepted medical view now that alcoholism is a disease. Not so back then. In fact, him saying what he was about to say was probably going to have most medical doctors label him as a quack. This doctor right here was the very first doctor in history, except for one, that had ever published a paper or written out a theory that alcoholism was a disease and kept his reputation. From what I understand, and I have not investigated it fully, and maybe somebody could tell me if I am a little bit wrong, there was a doctor named Benjamin Rush back in the American colonial times who did make reference to alcoholism being a disease, but apparently he did not really keep his reputation in other areas and it was just sort of dismissed and lost in history for a long time. Now, Silkworth was the very first doctor to say that alcoholism was a disease, and we also need to notice that this is an amazing thing that a medical doctor would stand behind a spiritual movement. That's huge. Because what do doctors usually, they think in medical problem, medical solution. And he's going to admit that most doctors, we're going to see here in a couple of paragraphs, that most doctors really do not put too much emphasis or credence on anything other than what is scientific and medical. And if he's going to write a paper and have a theory that we have a medical problem, but yet he's endorsing a spiritual answer. Now, he's probably willing to do that because for so many years he saw us die and die and die. And then all of a sudden, something happened in front of him that he couldn't deny it. Right? He could not deny what happened right there in front of him. So against his medical training, he had to say. You know, but it's a huge thing to put for a medical doctor to actually put on paper, to actually publish and attach his name to it and say, what my theory is that these people have a medical problem, but their answer is spiritual. It's a big thing. Now let's look at, after they got that letter of endorsement, when they got it, they said, this is just great, but you know what? It's really not what we're looking for. We want more. And they say, right after he signs it the first time on Roman numeral 24, is everybody there at Roman numeral 24? Then the people of Alcoholics Anonymous interject. And so this printing that is sort of larger, I imagine it is in your books also, a little bit larger than the next section of printing, is actually the group of Alcoholics Anonymous stepping in and talking again for the next couple of paragraphs. And it's very, very, they say some incredible stuff here. It says, in this statement, he confirms, meaning the doctor, that we who have suffered alcoholic torture must believe. Now notice it does not say that we think we should believe, it might be a good idea to believe. It says we must believe that the body of the alcoholic is quite as abnormal as his mind. It was no secret to society and family members and people who loved us that our minds were kind of screwed up. There was no secret. But but they didn't quite know how or why our minds were, how our minds quite operated. They just knew we were screwed up. But there's a very important aspect here that had never really been documented before, and that our bodies were abnormal. And these are the two things that if we read the doctor's opinion, that I firmly believe that we need to understand. We need to be able to apply these two things into our history, into our lives, and be able to document in our lives, or at least point out and really be very, very clear how these two things have operated in our lives if we are to be able to work step one in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that is the concept of allergy of the body, obsession of the mind. These are the two things that this doctor's opinion and the next few chapters, Bill's story, more about alcoholism, and there's a solution and more about alcoholism. Those are the two key things that just keep coming back and back and back. Allergy of the body, obsession of the mind. And this allergy of the body thing, Dr. Silkworth says, is a very important concept for us alcoholics to really understand. And Alcoholics Anonymous, through our little ceremonies also, I claim that this allergy of the body component of alcoholism is very, very important. We can't disregard its importance. In fact, this whole thing about taking 90-day chips, one-year anniversaries, five-year anniversaries, 10-year anniversaries of total abstinence is all based upon the fact that we really find it very, very important of this allergy of the body concept component of alcoholism. That's why we get so excited that we did not even take one drink. Now, many non-alcoholics think, and many alcoholics, what's the harm in one drink? Right? Many of us feel, what's the harm in one drink? Well, if we really know about allergy of the body, we know exactly the harm in one drink, right? Because that one drink, you see, nobody in Alcoholics Anonymous says when we take one drink, we're going to explode on the bar stool. Have you ever seen anybody blow up right on the bar stool? You ever seen anybody, you know, they take one drink and they dead? You ever seen anybody one drink and just black out? Yeah, there's some winos that maybe do that. But that we all know that's not the truth. But when we really understand this allergy of the body concept, there, we will guarantee an alcoholic one thing. If they take the first drink, we guarantee you there will be another. That's the only thing we guarantee you, that there will be another. You know? All right. Now, in fact, they, at the very bottom of this paragraph, they say, in our belief, any picture of the alcoholic, or I think believe another word there would be any description of the alcoholic, which leaves out this physical factor, is incomplete. So if you hear somebody in Alcoholics Anonymous say, I don't have an alcohol problem, I just have a living problem. Well, that's an incomplete picture, isn't it? Many people have a living problem. Don't we all have relatives who are not alcoholic that are pretty goofy? Some of us think they need a drink, right? Every family's got somebody who's got a living problem in it. In fact, the human condition, all human beings, the human condition is that we do have living problems. But if we're not alcoholic, we don't have this physical factor, right? So it says, any picture or any description of the alcoholic which leaves out this physical factor, this allergy of the body, is an incomplete description of alcoholism. Very next sentence, the doctor's theory that we have an allergy to alcohol interests us. It's the very first time they say the word allergy. Anybody in here allergic to strawberries? Nobody. There's usually one or two. Anybody allergic to milk? There we go. Okay. What happens to you when you drink milk?
Stomachache.
Okay. You become confused in the brain. Okay. Stomachache. So she gets because there were only three hands, there's about 200, my guess is 250 to 300 people in this room. Three hands went up that said they are allergic to milk. That means, don't take this badly, you have an abnormal reaction to milk. Right? Yeah. Right. Allergic just simply means abnormal. Right? And the only reason it's abnormal is that most of you don't. Now, if when we drank milk, 248 of us would get stomach aches and become confused in the brain, and three of us would drink, okay, nothing would happen, well, then what would they call milk? Poison. They would say, you don't drink it. We never would have picked that up as being a normal thing for human beings to drink, right? Then the normal reaction to drinking milk would be stomach ache, headaches, and confusion in the brain. And the abnormal reaction to milk would be no reaction, right? It's just as if people who are allergic to bee stings, or I'll use strawberries. I love the strawberry ones. You know, if somebody is allergic to strawberries, what usually happens is their glands swell up, they can't breathe, they get hives. They get swelled up, red blotches, and hives. Right? That's an abnormal reaction. Right? But most people can eat strawberries very successfully, just like you had said. But I don't know, have you ever been, does anybody know anybody that's allergic to strawberries? Wow, Iceland is not allergic to strawberries. That could be of some genetic importance around here. Is Aya here? She should go tell the fellows at Decode about this. But somebody who has that reaction to strawberries, swells up, glands, hives, all of this type of stuff, when they go to the restaurant and the waitress comes around and says, our special today is strawberry shortcake, fresh in today, they don't say, I'll take two. They don't say it. They go, no, 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 not me. Keep that away from here. They also don't need to go to Strawberries Anonymous, do they? In order to be able to do that. They're just naturally able to do that based upon their history with strawberries. They've had bad experiences with strawberries. They now, with no question in their mind, no, not for me, right? But me, with alcohol, I've got a terrible history with alcohol. Evidence in my life is overwhelming that drinking is a bad idea, you know? The waitress comes by and says, the specials are vodka kamikazes. I say, I'll take two. I have the capacity to say that while my jaw is wired shut from my last drunk. Right? All right, but that's the mental component. That's the thinking component. The physical factor is, and I'd like to, do we have any pens for that? Yeah. Do we? And if you could bring it up here so I can grab to it, I'll just keep talking here. So, they're saying that we have a medical problem. We have this mental and physical abnormal relationship with alcohol. Ah, great. Okay, so saying we got two, can you guys see that? Most everybody, yes? Just two columns, one is physical, one is mental. So by this time, what they're saying in the doctor's opinion is we have both an abnormal body and an abnormal mind. And what do you suppose are some, what are some of the symptoms of this physical allergy to alcohol? What's the main symptom? Now, the symptom to being allergic to strawberries is what? Swelling of the glands, hives, can't breathe. Those are the symptoms that would tell us, oh, you're allergic to strawberries. What is the symptom, the physical symptom of being allergic to alcohol? This weird thing called the phenomenon of craving. You can't see it. Nobody else can feel it. Only we kind of feel it. And as I said last night, the best description for me in my life of this phenomenon of craving, which is my symptom of being allergic to alcohol, just like the swelling and the hives are the symptom of being allergic to strawberries, this phenomenon of craving in my life is I seem to get thirstier the more I drink. When I would drink alcohol, it seemed like there was always this little pilot light burning in my belly. Always. Just this little pilot light burning 1 inch behind my belly. And when I would take a drink of alcohol, it's like throwing gasoline on a fire. And it would just, all of a sudden, there's an unquenchable thirst going on. And if I have that, that's alcoholic. That is a physical. All right. Did I spell phenomenon right? I think so. I'm hoping you Icelanders wouldn't know anyway. You probably do. You probably know our own language better than we know it. Now we're going to notice, I want you to turn one more page to Roman numeral 26, XXVI. And let's look what the doctor says about that. The first full paragraph, starting with the words, we believe. We believe, and so suggested a few years ago, that the action of alcohol on these chronic alcoholics is a manifestation of an allergy, that the phenomenon of craving is limited to this class and never occurs in the average temperate drinker. How many people have ever experienced starting to drink and this idea that getting thirstier as they drank beer, they became thirstier the more they drank, or just meaning to have a couple and all of a sudden find out that they drank 12 and all of it. How many people have ever experienced that in their life? Okay, if you've got your hand up, you're in serious trouble right now. Because it says right here, never occurs in the average temperate drinker. It may occur, and I don't want to confuse anybody right now, but there is a certain class called a certain type of hard drinker that the book talks about, right? That may or may not be alcoholic or become alcoholic. But a certain type of hard drinker that may not be alcoholic, that may apparently experience this, but it never occurs in the average temperate drinker. So, bottom line, if you just raise your hand, you are not an average temperate drinker. Sorry. My mother, when I start talking about getting thirstier the more you drink, or this little pilot light and it feels like you've just poured gasoline on the fire and it's now raging, she looks at me like I'm crazy. Well, she's right, but she has no concept in any way, shape, or form, and has no experience in alcohol ever doing that to her. No idea at all. Right? All right. Now, it says that these allergic types can never safely use alcohol in any form at all. So that means now that it's not okay just to drink mixed drinks. It's not okay now just to drink beer and lay off the hard stuff. They're saying in any form at all, and they're even talking about mouthwash. Right, Ted? You would have to hear Ted's story to know that. And once having formed the habit, they found they cannot break it. Once having lost their self-confidence, their reliance upon things humans, their problems pile up on them and become astonishingly difficult to solve. Okay, before we get on to this, underneath the phenomenon of craving, what are some of the things that alcoholics do while drinking as a result of this physical factor and the phenomenon of craving? What are some of the things that we talk about in meetings that we do as a result of that? Wrecking cars, losing jobs, right? All those things. Those are all the things that are a result of the physical factor, what happens to us when we do drink. When we have alcohol in our system, yeah, we wreck cars. At least I do, I imagine you do. We lose jobs because we, you know, jobs get in the way of our drinking, don't they? We ruin families. And the list goes on and on and on, right? As a result of the things that we do while we have alcohol in us. And most people on this planet believe that's alcoholism. We can't control our drinking. We do all these crazy things that society doesn't like. And if we would just knock it off, we'd be fine. That's what most of society views. They don't quite understand this phenomenon of craving, but they know that we drink badly and that we drink too much, and we say we're not going to, but we do. and that we do all these things, they have to lock us up, they have to get us out of their lives, because we do these things, and if you would just stop, things will be okay. And if that were true, like I said last night, all we'd have to do is once a year we would have a Just Say No convention, and that'd be it. Maybe we would all wear shirts that say Just Say No, just to give us a little reminder that no. But there is another, yes, Mickey. I think they want you on the.
Hi, I'm Mickey Bush. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Mickey.
Do you have a definition or an explanation of what phenomenon of craving is or means? What's a definition of a phenomenon of craving?
It is, well, what I've been trying to say is that for me, the way I describe it is that when I drink, I cannot stop drinking. And it is a physical factor of that alcohol has this abnormal reaction in my body, that I have this abnormal physical reaction of that I get this phenomenon of craving.
I kind of understood that. Mm-hmm. That's what happens. And mm-hmm. the result of that happening is that I can't control my drinking. But what does it mean, phenomenon of craving? What's the definition for phenomenon of craving? What is
well, I'm not sure the definition you're looking for, Mick, and I bet you anything you'll be clearing that up when you do your 1, 2, and 3.
You're right.
I bet you will. Okay. Now, at the bottom of page 26 again, what I'd like to show here is the next factor of it. At the bottom, I love this paragraph. This paragraph describes my life better than any paragraph I know on this planet. It says, men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. The sensation is so elusive that while they admit it is injurious, they cannot, after a time, differentiate the true from the false. To them, their alcoholic life seems the only normal one. Quick question, how many people here are on probation or have been on probation? Did you know that that is not normal? That is not a normal life. Having a many of us think that just get so used to having a probation officer that we just think it's normal. That's not normal living. Okay? How many people regularly, and prior to coming to Alcoholics Anonymous for many years, always some sort of conflict going on with their families on a regular basis? That is not normal living. That's not the normal life. How many people at least every 90 days would have some sort of catastrophe that seemed, I just don't know how I'm going to get out of this one? At least every night, that's not normal living. That's not a normal life. But we begin to accept that as being a normal life. That's just the way it is. To them, the alcoholic life seems the only normal one. Now, when this next part is so beautiful. It's when we are sober with no alcohol in our system, we are restless, irritable, and discontented. This is why, unless they can again experience the sense of ease and comfort which comes at once by taking a few drinks. Okay? So, we have this mental obsession, this type of thinking, okay, that leads us back to the first drink at all costs. And one of the things that sets us up there, and it's sort of, I'm gonna be writing this third column here, and there's a reason I'm doing this, because I'm going to bring it back here in a second, is there's a third column of what we call the spiritual problem also. Okay, I'm going to write that in there. Before we get to that, I'd like to ask, what are some of the things that we do that always lead us back to the next drink? That might be symptoms of the mental obsession.
Rationalize?
Okay, I'll take that. How about rationalize or blame others for our problems? Do we do that? What's the big one? This time it'll be different. Or
false beliefs. This time
it'll be different. How about if I just got the right woman or the right man, things will be better and I won't need to drink this way? Anybody ever felt that way? Or is it that our mothers keep telling us that? If you just got the right woman or the right man, you would. And we go, yeah. Or maybe not the right one, but maybe a different one. We just change. How about it's this job? Or I don't have a job. If I had a job, or if I didn't have this job, I had a different job. If they paid me more money, or if they didn't give me this much money, you know, there are actually people that think if they just didn't pay me this much, I wouldn't be screwing up this way. And wouldn't you like to have that problem? Right? So, that could be another one, different job. I know my writing's getting sloppy down here at the bottom. All right, this list can go on and on and on, and if you work with other alcoholics, you hear a new one every week. Right? Of the reasons why that if they just did this, this is going to be okay. And we have to understand that you can put anything into column number two, it doesn't matter, and column one is going to be there. You could actually even start telling yourself the truth about all these things in your lives and not have any of these thoughts. And if we drink, column one is still going to be there, right? But it seems like when we combine those two, this strange thinking, this lying to ourselves and others, especially to ourselves, and this strange drinking, we're in serious trouble. We're going to the gates of insanity or death. And as a result of that, I believe, is that we develop serious spiritual problems. Now, all of mankind has spiritual problems, not just alcoholics. Everybody has spiritual problems. That's the human condition. That's why mankind, so many people have turned to religion. They're always going to self-help books. They're always turning to something. Mankind naturally seeks God. It's just been a fact. Ever since man even had the concept of this stuff, they've always either sought God or created something that they could believe in. Ancient times, they would create pagan gods just as a grasping at straws to try to answer these spiritual questions that they've had. If you study history, they've always done that, alcoholic or not alcoholic. Man has always sought God. Now, when you combine these two things, this crazy drinking and this crazy rationalizing thinking, this insane thinking, and Mickey's going to go into really beautiful definitions of that when he gets into his workshop. Now, when we combine those two, we're in serious, serious trouble. Now, what I'd like to do is real quick, we're going to hop up out of the doctor's opinion for 1 second to get... Well, first of all, before we do that, I want to put this restless, irritable, and discontent under the spiritual problem column, okay? These are symptoms of our spiritual malady, that no alcohol in our system. We're trying desperately not to drink again. We're trying to cover all our lies from the last drunk. We're trying to figure out how we're going to get away with our next drunk. Got all these problems going on, and we become restless, irritable, and discontent. You ever felt that way where it's just been too long? We've been too good for too long. And damn it! And we start going through our minds all these other things. If that woman or that man would just straighten out, if that boss or that coworker would just leave me alone or do what they're supposed to do. I mean, that coworker, I mean, they do this, it creates so much more work for me. If I just had more money, I wouldn't be always just every night worrying about the bills. And if my mother-in-law would get off my back and the kids. Oh. Right? This restlessness, irritability, and discontentment starts to trigger all of those blaming others for everything And sooner or later, just like it says, let's go back. I'm sorry for jumping up real quick. Back to the bottom of page Roman numeral 26. They are restless, irritable, and discontent unless they can again experience the ease and comfort which comes at once by taking a few drinks. Drinks they see others taking with impunity. We all know that feeling. We're there just pulling our hair out. If that coworker, that job, that wife, that husband, if we could just get them off our back, and we get to the bar, and we get that first drink in, and we're just about ready to explode, and we get that first drink in, and well, who gives a shit about that job anyway? That wife, I was single for many years before I met her. Right? All these things come through. And I mean, alcohol just seems to have, for me as an alcoholic, an unbelievably satisfying response. Whew. Drinks they see others taking with impunity. I told you last night I was in the Navy. This one used to kill me. I would be in so much trouble from the week, a day, a month before, again and again and again. And then I'd be trying not to drink, or I'd be on that Anabuse, right? And in between, while I was on the Anabuse, during the 7 months I was on Anabuse, there were a couple of weeks in between each drunk, right? Because I'd be just in so much trouble from the last one. And payday would come around, and all the sailors would line up at what they call the dispersing office, and paychecks were handed out, and it's usually on a Friday, and we'd be pulling into port, and all the sailors would have their paychecks in their hands, and they would be off to the shore. And I'd be standing there. Now, I'm usually often restricted to the ship if I'm in too much trouble, or I'm thinking, I can't go. I'd see them all take off onto shore with their paychecks, and arm in arm, and singing songs, and they're off to have a great time in a foreign country. Just great. And this is the part that used to baffle me. Many of them, many, many, many of them would come back on the same night with most of their paycheck still in their pocket. I would talk to a few of them the next day, and they'd say, oh, yes, 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 I have a wife and children at home. I'm going to be putting most of this paycheck. I went into town. I cashed the paycheck. I went out to the bar with the boys, but I have a wife and kids at home. I need to be sending about 70% of this check back home. And I would stand there in disbelief. Because they are drinking with impunity, without punishment. They are in full control of their drinking. Now, it's not to say that every once in a while they did not get drunk. Non-alcoholics get drunk. But you know what they do? They plan on getting drunk. They decide when and where they're going to get drunk. They decide who they're going to get drunk with. They make a decision that they're going to keep their clothes on the whole drunk. And they do those things, and they know. It's like they go, oh my goodness, it's New Year's coming up, right? New Year's Eve, and they know, you know what? I usually drink about 6 or 7 drinks to get drunk. And they drink 6 or 7 drinks to get drunk. And they have no idea. The non-alcoholic does not really know what it means to continue drinking while already drunk. They drink to the point that they like to, and the reason they can do that is because a few times in their life they've made the mistake of over-drinking, and they don't like that. It's not that they don't like to be drunk, but they've made the mistake of over-drinking and getting sick or doing something stupid, and they've learned from that lesson. Isn't that bizarre? And so that if they're going to get drunk again, they know how many drinks they're supposed to drink, and they drink that many, and they stay with the people that they left with. Isn't that a bizarre one? They go out with Fred, Jim, and Sally, and they stick with Fred, Jim, and Sally. And they have their party, And they drink to this point where they like to get drunk, and they, you know, they might have a little hangover. It's very strange stuff. Drinks they see others taking with impunity. After they have succumbed to the desire again, as so many do, and the phenomenon of craving develops, just like that, once they've succumbed to the desire again, this mental obsession has driven them back to the first drink. They have succumbed to that. You know what you guys understand, succumb? Given into, right? Given into that desire, and they drink again, and the phenomenon of craving develops, and they pass through the well-known stages of a spree, right? The spree is well-known stages of a drunk, right? They emerge remorseful with a firm resolution not to do this, not to drink again. This is repeated over and over, and unless this person can experience an entire psychic change, there is very little hope of his recovery. Okay, I'd like to get into some more symptoms of this spiritual problem. It's up on page 52, not Roman numeral 52, but regular 52, in We Agnostics. We had to ask ourselves why we shouldn't apply to our human problems the same readiness to change our point of view. Here's the part I'm talking about. We were having trouble with our personal relationships. We couldn't control our emotional natures. We were a prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy, and we couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. Anybody ever felt that way in their life? Or any combination of the above? Yeah. Okay, let's try to... I'm just going to put down some initials for it. Trouble with personal relationships. Can't control our emotional natures. Misery and depression. Can't make a living. Full of fear. Unhappy. Can't be of help to other people. I'm putting that circle with a line through it like you can't, right? You ever seen those things? All right. So these are all symptoms of serious spiritual troubles. Okay? Now, I'd like to go to page 64. And this is what I think is the secret of what Alcoholics Anonymous does, and why we are asked to do all the things we're asked to do. In the bottom paragraph, when it's talking, the very first sentence is resentment is the number one offender. We're not going to get into that. I'm sure Michael is going to get very much into that. But in the middle of that paragraph, it says, when the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. I believe they are referring to this idea, that Alcoholics Anonymous will straighten out column 3. When we do all the things we're supposed to do, this column here is what's going to be solved. Doesn't this look like all of the things that can be solved by the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous? These are all the things that the steps address. And when we solve the spiritual malady, the mental obsession does not come into play. It seems to be relieved. And when that is relieved, this becomes a moot point. If we do not have this mental obsession and we do not, as it says, succumb to the desire for the first drink again, then the fact that we are allergic to alcohol is of no consequence, is it? Just like the person who is allergic to strawberries, it does not matter that they're allergic to strawberries if they eat no strawberries. It only becomes a factor in their life if they eat strawberries. I'm convinced that Alcoholics Anonymous is designed to do just that, to address the spiritual malady which then relieves the mental obsession and makes the physical factor null and void. It no longer is, it is not a factor in our lives. Okay. I think I have gone long enough, and we'll now turn it over to a question and answer period if people have questions. Okay? Anybody got questions? Or is everybody dying for coffee, cigarette, and bathroom?
What's my recovery if I've been sober for 17 days? Is it a good recovery?
I'm not quite able to hear. I'm very sorry.
How good is my recovery if I've been sober?
For 70 days? How good is your recovery if you've been sober for 70 days? Are you recovered if you've been sober for 70 days? Have you worked all 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous?
No.
Then no, you are not. You are in a very dangerous point. You're in untreated alcoholism, to tell you the truth. You are very susceptible to columns 2 and 3 here. Yes, you have not. If you have not had any alcohol for 70 days, you have temporarily put this first column at bay, temporarily. But if we do not do what's asked of us in Alcoholics Anonymous, we are totally, totally involved in columns 2 and 3. Yes?
How about if I've been sober for 10 years and not taking the spiritual part of it? Am I then recovered?
I really can't answer that for you. If you've been sober for 10 years, I don't want you to take this wrong. If you've been sober for 10 years, but you have not done this, then there's two ways for me to look at it. Number one, you found some other way that, because no, Alcoholics Anonymous does not say that there may not be another way to stay sober. And maybe you have found another way that has worked, but I don't see many giant followings of meetings with your name on it because you're sitting here with us.
I actually have worked the steps.
Oh, okay.
And I know the difference. I'm just asking us.
Yeah, you know. Okay. So I'm not saying it back personally. But when somebody says that, that's the only way for me to think they found some other way that has worked for them, but apparently it is not working for the masses, or they're not an alcoholic of my type. And I usually go with, if you stayed sober a long time, but have not worked the steps, have not followed what I have found, you can't be like me. And I have to say that for my own protection, because it's so easy for the alcoholic mind to go, if I meet too many people in 1 week that say, I'm sober 15 years, haven't been to meetings. And if I happen to just be a little bit restless, irritable, and discontent that day, I'm susceptible to think, well, my God, maybe I could do that. Maybe I could get a little extra golf in that way, and maybe I could make a little more money at golf. I could start another company. I could do all these things. And so I always have to say it in my own heart when I hear somebody that has stayed sober that long, one of those two things, and I usually go, they must not be an alcoholic of my type, because I could never last 10 years. Yes, Thor?
In direct relation to what he was saying is... A person staying sober a long time on the fellowship alone is a very common thing in many parts.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the steps are the solution that the AA book talks about.
Yes.
But obviously, a lot of people have stayed sober on the fellowship alone. Could you go into that a little bit?
I would say that that is a great, great... that shows... Again, the power of Alcoholics Anonymous, that some people are able to just, again, stay sober that long just on the power of the fellowship. But, again, do you see them in the middle? What I always want to say, do you see them in the middle of the night? Do you see them at home in the way they're interacting and reacting? Are they happy with their lives and feeling really useful?
No.
Yeah, you see? They're still, this third column is still at a big play in their life, right? When you haven't worked the steps. And God, what a terrible way to live. And you see, I can't imagine myself as I am being able to live with that in my life too long before I would drink again. Because I just, am always somebody seeking relief. I really am. And I have found better relief in Alcoholics Anonymous than that now. Yes, Mike.
I just want to make a comment. I think you did a wonderful job on this, on Doctor's Opinion. Absolutely fabulous. The one thing I wanted to say to this gentleman, in the big book it says, after step nine, those promises come after step nine, and there's no way you might be able to stay sober, which some people call dry. But to really have the promises come through, come true in your life, you have to have done the steps. The promises come after step nine.
Where do I stand? If I'm being sober for 70 days, I'm proud of it. I'm very proud of it.
Yes, you should be.
Yeah, but this guy over there, River, have been sober for 10 years. Is he in a better condition but me?
Answer that.
That's he's dead. It's a wonderful question. You know, I would have to say that somebody with 10 years of untreated alcoholism is in a worse position than you are at 70 days. Because it's so much easier for somebody with 10 years to say, I've got 10 years, put that block up. It's often hard for somebody else who's worked the steps that has 4 years to even approach somebody with 10 years and say, look, I found a way to be happy, right? Much easier to approach you, my friend, and say, look it, got 70 days, come on, let's do what we're doing, get enthusiastic, here's the steps. You and your frame of mind with 70 days may be more open-minded to taking the actions that you need to take.
Yeah, probably
short
here.
That's okay.
There's a guy who drove me home last night. I live in a shelter with some guys like me. Mm-hmm. They are sober. But he said, I'm going to take you, like Michael said, I'm going to take you to 18 meetings in a row.
Some fellow at...
He told me, I'm going to drive you to 18 meetings in this weekend.
A fellow from AA said that?
Yeah, a friend of mine.
Well, good for him. That's great.
Is it good for me?
It's good for you, but you know what? It's better for him.
My name is Oscar and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Austin.
I've been without a drink for nearly 5 years, and I'm just starting to work the step now, and I'm at the fourth. And I can say for myself, you know, it's not been as openness, just without a drink, because I had all the, you know, the shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I'm meaning?
Yes. Yes, I know exactly what you mean. Yeah. We need to hear this again and again of people who have experienced.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And what it is that if you're taking the steps, we're clearing away enough of the wreckage that God can naturally enter. It's just that simple. And we feel it. It's an amazing thing. A human being without a contact with God is incomplete and will reach and grasp at all sorts of things to try to get comfortable as a natural reaction. Yeah.
Hi, Carl.
Hello, Mick.
Hi, everybody. My name's Ricky Bush, and I wanted to make a comment with... is it on? Is this working? Yeah. And that is, you know, there's a total difference between being sober and living in sobriety. Sober is the absence of alcohol and drugs from your body. Sobriety is the absence of alcohol and drugs from your body with a clear thinking and understanding. See, alcoholics must have one or two things, alcohol or program, because they're the only two things that treat the disease. So you can stay sober on the fellowship. You can stay sober, but our book says the elimination, we think elimination of our drinking is but a beginning. A far greater demonstration of our principles lies before us in our respective homes, occupations, and affairs. So I got to stay sober, but working the steps is what's going to induce the psychic change that Carl talked about. Absolutely essential. Otherwise, there is very little hope of his recovery. We've not only got to stay sober, but we've got to recover from the effects of alcoholism. And if we don't, we get so painful. There's an old saying that there's no greater pain than an alcoholic who relapses and has a belly full of booze and a head full of AA. But I'll give you pain. I'll give you pain worse than that. You get sober here and just stay sober without a head full of AA, and you will hurt like you don't want to hurt. You will hurt so bad you will have to drink again, because sober people drink again. The pain of the familiar becomes preferable to the pain of the unknown, and we have to go back to satisfy that restless, irritable, and discontented feeling. See? Otherwise, so that's what the importance of the steps is, to induce the psychic change. A psychic change is what induces a psychic change is 12 spiritual steps. And if you don't done the steps, you ain't induced a psychic change. If you don't induce a psychic change, there's very little hope of your recovery. That's why the importance. Oh, you can stay sober. S-O-B-E-R, son of a bitch, everything's real. That's all sober is. But it ain't recovery and it ain't sobriety either.
You know what? You know how they have those little, when you go to the movies and they show you little previews of the movies coming up? You just got a little preview of Mickey for later today and tonight. There you go.
Hi, my name is Inga and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Inga.
Could I have your definition of an old timer, please?
Now, there's two ways to look at that. There are a number of ways to look at that. Now, in Southern California, this is the way that the general thing that they say, and it is based upon one way to view old timer. Okay? There's this fellow named Harvey Andrews, Harvey A, in our area. He's got 43 years of sobriety. Just one second, my friend. Okay? And he has been very frustrated over the years because way back when he had 13 years, 15 years was an old timer. And it was just based upon just the idea of how many years you have and using that definition of old timer. And when he got to 15 years, that very same year, the definition changed to 20 years. And then when he made it, just before he hit 20 years, all of a sudden they had a vote at an old timers meeting and they changed it to 25 years. And by God, right before he hit 25 years, they changed it to 30. And now that's where it stands right now in the Southern California area on when they define old timer, on when they have an old timer meeting. You have to have 30 years to share. When they at conferences, when they have an old timer meeting, only those with 30 plus years can share or read the steps or anything like that. And we all sit back there going, ooh, ooh, right? Now, the other thing is the difference between on the idea of is somebody an old timer, and we use that affectionately for someone who has been active in Alcoholics Anonymous for a long, long period of time, or the sort of senior person in one's group, or the senior group, a small senior group within a larger group in a certain town. There's always the group of old timers. The other way to, and this is the other way to look at it, someone who has been active consistently for a long, long period of time in Alcoholics Anonymous, not somebody who just happens to show up on the scene and say, well, I haven't had a drink in 25 years. I've only been to 3 meetings, and I want you to respect me and treat me like an old timer, a revered member of your group. Well, no. 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 So there's two sort of ideas there, just the basic numbers of years, and then, of course, the idea of someone active, long-term, and in a long, sort of a senior group within their larger group. Yes. And I'll get back to you in a second, Paul.
My name is Vidar, and I'm an alcoholic. And does there stand anything in the book about old-timers? in the big book.
Yeah, there were none when they wrote it.
Yeah, but is there something that says something about old timers in the book?
No, it really does not. It does not even mention sponsor in the book.
So it really has nothing to do anything with AA.
Well, it's become within our custom of our society. Now, I do need to say this. Any society that is going to survive long term must have these two components. Must respect and learn from their elders and must teach their young. And Alcoholics Anonymous does that, right? We respect and learn from our elders and we teach our young. Any society, whether it be something like this or any other society, if it were a society of people stranded on a desert island, that society would have to get those things going to survive. Teach their young how to survive on the island and respect their elders who already know how to survive on the island and learn from them. Every society must have that. And I'm very proud that Alcoholics Anonymous has adopted that basic tenet, because if we didn't, we wouldn't survive. One second. Yeah, there we go. Doctor. Yeah, yeah. Paul. Hi, Paul.
An old-timer, if you go to an AA meeting and there's someone in that meeting who wasn't born when you stopped drinking, then you're an old-timer.
That's right. I love that one. Yes. We may want to wrap up so that we have enough time for lunch, because we're going to start again at 1 o'clock, and you're in for a great treat this afternoon, so don't stay too long at lunch. Thank you for your attention.